You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 132. Today is Thursday, March 28th. Just any old Thursday, Steve. It also happens to be opening day, at least the real one for me. The traditions are underway. I'll probably be listening to this in between golfing and taking the day off work, ready to watch baseball. I'm fired up, man. We're finally here. It's been a long winter. It always is. And yeah, man, we get a full, well, kind of, minus some rainouts, but we're not talking about that today. Slate of baseball, Steve. Happy opening day. How's it going over there?
Yeah, it's great. I think ever since we got moved on the schedule of Thursday, this has now been 2 or 3 days where we have the honor of having the opening day show on the Pitcherless feed. I know there's plenty of other shows that go on, and Nick does an amazing job with the actual, you know, intense breakdowns of every streaming possibility and every pitching, you know, detail that you need to know. To have the hour long show on the Thursday is on opening day is an honor. It's really cool to be here, and I think we did chalkboard last opening day too, or maybe that was the one before, but this is our premiere show. This is like the first really recurring idea that we had and have stuck with it. So cool that we've had the opportunity to do this on opening day. And yeah, like you said, man, it's great every single year. Like it's like Christmas. We're recording this on Wednesday night. If you're watching us live on stream, it's live on Wednesday night. It feels exactly like Christmas Eve did when you're a kid. It's an amazing day.
It is amazing. And for anybody who's like, you know, glued to their phone and, you know, fully in this like we are, Steve, it also can be agonizing when you're like, you don't have a game in the 3 o'clock slate and you're just constantly refreshing your phone, or you finally watch your guy at bat and he strikes out right away. But this is what we wait for. This is
yeah,
why
it's
we
a
love it.
it's a frustrating game, and that's why it's an amazing game.
It is.
I can't wait to get mad.
The league again, everyone's probably got the league threads where they're like, oh, I've missed this kind of suffering and everything.
Yes,
so
exactly,
yeah, it's
exactly
amazing. And also in the spirit of Christmas, we got a gift today because we got a special guest joining the show on the back third of the show. So you guys tune in, stick around. He will also be giving us chalkboard picks. So the first time we've ever opened it up beyond Steve and myself. But we keep mentioning this chalkboard thing. For a little bit of background for anybody who's kind of newer to the show, the origin story on the chalkboard is one of our OG listeners kind of mentioned that he thought it would be cool if we ramped up the accountability in terms of calling your shot, calling your guys. And so our solution for that was to basically say, okay, let's pick out some targets, pick out some fades, and then revisit it at the end of the year. And they have to either perform 20% better than their ADP, or if they're a fade, 20% worse than their ADP, to kind of, you know, effectively have a scoreboard of how we're doing with our advice here. It's now year four? Man, time flies. Year four of this. The first year, Steve, I just looked like an absolute guru. I believe Marcus Semien was my crown call.
He had like 40 80, homers, right? Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was ADP 125. He went like 40, 23 or something like that. And I never would have imagined that. Second year, you completely swept me, Steve. I think you might have had Shane McClanahan when he was like ADP 100. There might have even been the Dylan Cease call in there. That was a great year for you. And then last year was the rubber match, but we didn't learn too much because we were both pretty even on our chalkboard picks. And overall, it was good. I think we were like, you know, 1 for 2 across the board, or 500. This year, we're doing 3 targets, 3 fades each. And we're basing this ADP on the past 2 weeks in March. And we'll kind of list that out. It's based on NFBC, all drafts. So we'll acknowledge the draft pick and where they got to move to. But yeah, that's kind of the background rundown. But Steve, anything you want to add to the actual topic? I know we got a ton of guys to get through, so I will be doing my best to keep us moving in a timely manner here, especially with our guest.
No, you're doing great. You're a great host. You always move us through, even if I
tend to
ramble. But you know, it's opening day. It's the quintessential WAF show, right? This is our thing, right? So happy to spend a little bit more time on it. But yeah, it's just a way to put some guys out there that will follow year. It's cool that we are able to track it, play a little game with it. I know, you know, we talked about it a little bit off air. There's some ways around it with loopholes in ADP. Like if you pick a guy so low to do well, he doesn't have to do that well. So we try to actually, you know, put some guys that we could actually, you know, see rise or fall, that we're putting our names behind. So, and a lot of these guys I have lots of shares of too. I know it's not like the targets are our most shared players, but they're guys that I've either avoided or actually rostered too. So have more than just this little game at stake here. So excited to do it. Excited for actual real baseball in the, you know, a little over what, like 15 hours now. I guess there's the first game got rain delayed, so maybe we're like closer to 17 hours or so, but hey, that's a lot closer than we were even last week.
Maybe we got some people from the lunch hour because of it, you know. Yeah. But yeah, we'll jump in though, because we got again three each on targets and fades, so 12 names, and then we're welcoming our guest. Target number one for me, Steve, is actually Marcell Ozuna, which it feels full circle from the pitcherless too early mock draft, because I grabbed Ozuna. I felt like it was way late. As of course you get the debate with Nick Pollock, but man, this one, for an ADP of, where is it? It's 146. So he would have to finish in the Razzball player rater, by the way, at 121 or better for this to come to fruition. But I think that there's every chance for it, because Ozuna, what we saw last year was Herculean other than the first month. So going back as a refresher, in terms of his splits, his April was so brutal, where he hit 091. That was 5 for 55 at the plate with 18 strikeouts. After that, the guy was pretty much a three. I mean, he was practically Yordan Alvarez the rest of the way, because his final line, even with that awful April, was 274, a 904 OPS, 40 home runs. And then, of course, with the Braves, you've got the counting stats with where he had 84 runs, but 100 RBIs. Ozuna, I mean, in terms of what happened, he basically just got back to crushing fastballs like he used to do. I think we might have a chart where on the stream here, Steve, if you want to pull it up. But nice charts of Ozuna basically crushing fastballs. But overall, his chase rate went down a little bit. And the hard hit, the barrel rate was the highest barrel rate of his entire career at 16.6%. Now, I know that this is a career year, but I think that that's more than baked into the ADP. If you were drafting him with the expectations of what he did last year, he'd probably be going at ADP like 50 overall. So instead, you're getting him at 150, and he's just got to finish 121. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what else can be said about Ozuna. I just think that this is basically, I mean, I guess the final note is it's his last year before his contract is up and the Braves can extend. So he's got incentive to go out there and you know, really go for it. His projections, 255 average, 32 home runs. I think even that with the lineup he's in could be enough to get him here. But I think that that's possibly selling the power and the average a little bit short if he can tap into what he did last year. So that's my pitch for Marcell Ozuna. Not sure if you got anything to add there, Steve, or if you want to shift over to your target number one.
No, I'll just add that I think that there's probably a little bit of a depressed price because of the util only for not really playing the field last year. But that being said, I think that, you know, it kind of goes to show just how amazing his year was last year. With everything that, you know, he did at the plate, like, well, he got 40 homers, right? It was just absolutely insane. And he was super, super cold to start the year. So that, you know, that those home runs and that production basically came in, you know, one less month of the season. He was not rosterable at all in April. I think he was batting under 200. So, it's easy to forget, I guess, with how poorly it went in the few years prior to that, and the start last year, that Ozuna was this really good power hitter and was with Miami, and sort of became this top end fantasy outfielder, and he still possesses those quality contact skills, as you can see, with this power rate. It's just absolutely insane what he was able to do.
He's just 33 years old. I'm going to jump in though, Steve, because you know I'm feeling, you know, I got the boost. All right, I got the boost for opening day, and I'm going to do something a little wild here. His Yahoo eligibility is outfield, and his Yahoo ADP is 133. So I'm going to go ahead and give this a stamp that he's going to move all the way up to the top 110 in the player rater.
I like it. I like
just it. To remove the bias there. So I'm going to say 146 all the way to 110 because of the Yahoo one, and I'm still gonna sign off on that.
There you go. I like it. That's a bold move and a good call.
Might be one I come to regret when we're keeping score later. We'll have to see how it goes. Right, but Steve, right. Take us to target number one for you.
So this is a repeat. I believe he was on my first chalkboard, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was like the one that I got right heading into 2021 when Vlad had that amazing breakout year where he hit 40 homers. And that's Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
I remember that, like ADP 60, and he ended up top 15 or top 10.
But I think the tax and the hate has gone too far on Vladimir Guerrero. It makes me feel good because if you read Eno Saris's bold prediction piece, which came out on The Athletic today, like all of those guys that he had bold predictions for are guys that I've rostered heavily. Like Ellie De La Cruz, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. It's like
O'Neill Cruz, right?
Yeah, like I feel great that Eno likes those guys, but it's also like, wait, do I need these bowl predictions to happen? But no, I think Vlad could still be really good. I think that there's been some under the hood adjustments that he's made that haven't come to fruition as far as the actual stat lines. That mainly being his ground ball rate. You can see this is a ground ball rate over basically the entire time that he's been in the majors. And whenever there's been an improvement in ground ball rate and he's gotten that below, 45%, there's been a giant jump in his slugging production, except for last year. He got the ground ball rate down, but the slug did not follow. And there was another also good visual in Eno's piece today at The Athletic. Over and check that out. Just about the steady improvement in ground ball rate over time that Vlad has made in his career. So there is some subtle adjustments. He's entering his age 25 season. So like this is it. This is the prime power years, and I think we're going to see some prime seasons from Vlad coming up. He underperformed his X slug by 60 points. I know X slug isn't everything, but for a guy that hits the ball that hard to underperform his slugging percentage like that, it's a big deal. So I just think that what I found interesting is that he reduces ground ball rate to 2021 levels, yet his homer to fly ball rate was the worst of his career. So he's hitting more fly balls. But it was only a 14.4% homer to fly ball rate. That was the lowest homer to fly ball rate he's had since that disappointing rookie year in 2019.
That's going to turn around. Yeah.
In 2022, he had a 19% homer to fly ball rate. In 2021, he had a 26% homer to fly ball rate. If he had 2022's homer to fly ball rate with this year's ground ball rate, he has 35 homers last year as opposed to the 26. If he had 2021's homer to fly ball rate with the amount of fly balls he hit last year, he hit 47. So if he just pairs this low ground ball rate with his lower ground ball rate and more fly balls with any sort of homer to fly ball luck and just like a career average homer to fly ball luck, he's going to hit 35 homers again. And I think there's upside for more, which is, you know, the fact that he is one of the best quality contact guys in the majors. You know, I think we've paid attention. Like, I think he's fallen because he's been essentially a first rounder for 2 years and hasn't really performed like a first rounder. And I think those guys get taxed a lot and see their ADP fall. So it does have to be a decent jump. I think he has to finish as a top 24 player, so a top 2 round pick. He has to jump back to that. I'm all in on Vlad Jr. again.
Oh, I love it, Steve. I think he's one of the guys we both have in our home leagues, right? We only share a few, but he's one. And yeah, I mean, I know it's super small, but 8 steals a couple years ago, 5 steals last year, at least he's non-zero there as well, and kind of sneaks in with like 90-ish runs. So yeah, I mean, he's almost 4.5 category, and I think looking at some of the projections, like Steamer's got him for 35 bombs. Sign me up for that, man. And no way that average is going to be 264 or whatever it was last year. So I am all aboard on the Vlad train. I love that one. And yeah, even though he doesn't have to move as far, he only has to move 6 picks for you. That still means he's got to be a top 2 round. So I actually think our system's not bad because, you know, it's like they got to protect what's already theirs on the pricey ADP. But the deeper you go, the more you have to move. The more people you got to kind of leapfrog. So let's go to the other side of the coin, which is the fades. And this one, Steve, I've already kind of teased it out, is my new Eugenio Suarez, which, again, for any of the WAF faithfuls from year one, I was in it with the industry. I was a hard fade on Eugenio the year everybody was taking him, like, pick 50 overall. He was still with the Reds. And I dug the flag in. And, Steve, it was, again, part of that successful year that I had on year one, because Eugenio hadn't been the same player since. And every year I've given up on trying to fade Garrett Cole. And also it wouldn't be worthwhile this year anyway. It's just a weird season. But I'm zigging where the industry is zagging on Mr. Bobby Miller. This is going to be the meme of all the swords pointing at me, whatever that cartoon movie is. I haven't seen it. But my take is that Bobby Miller is going to move from an ADP 69 back to pick 83, or we'll finish outside of the top 83, which isn't super bold, but it's more the statement itself that I'm not buying it on the Bobby Miller breakout. And I think part of this is I just think we're a little bit too quick. Of course, I'm excited about, you know, a 24-year-old with his extension, with his velocity. But when you kind of game log him from last year, my biggest issue is that we have yet to even see it. The most he ever struck out was like 8 in a game. But for the most part, I just never saw him in the groove. Throughout all last year, he had 119 strikeouts in 124 innings. In spring training, he's got well under a strikeout per inning. And yeah, it's not to say that I don't like the guy as a pitcher, because I think in my world, he would be the very top of like SP3s that I'm like excited to throw a dart at, but he is kind of being ordained an ace. And I think that's premature. So that's where I'm going with this one. I think when you think about what the Dodgers do, there's a possibility that they might tinker if something goes wrong, even for a few starts. So there might be some volume questions. On top of that, maybe the biggest thing is that he's not really, and he didn't last year, locating his fastball up in the zone. So that's a bit of a concern as well. Put it all in the mixer. I know he's got good control, but when I see that 23% strikeout rate last year and then the K rate through the minors or the spring training, my thought is he's got to show me before I'm going to give him top 70 overall ADP. So that's my case against Bobby Miller. I have no shares. Although maybe in that one league, you fought me tooth and nail where we share the team. I did budge on Bobby Miller, but that is fade number one for me, is Bobby Miller.
I'm going to go a little off rundown here and go out of order at least and go with my second target, which is Bobby Miller.
There we go.
So I am banking on him not only improving on that strikeout rate, but becoming a top 55 player and essentially, you know, a top 10 starting pitcher. The strikeouts are coming, man. The stuff is too good for them not to be there. I'm relying a little bit on Eno Saris and our fearless leader, Nick Pollock. but he is sixth amongst pitchers with 80 innings in stuff plus. Guys around guys that are just all aces, and then like Graham Ashcraft.
I was just about to say, what about Graham Ashcraft?
Bobby Miller is not Graham Ashcraft. He has the control. He has more than, you know, just one pitch. He is the only pitcher with five pitches above 108 stuff plus, and that comes with 130 stuff plus on the fastball and 153 stuff plus on the slider. Like, this is one. This is a Kyle Bradish slider with a guy who throws 99 that could command the fastball. So it's like it's Bradish with a good fastball. He's 22nd in ideal contact rate, so he pairs that stuff with elite quality of contact control. Gets good extension, good IVB, and induced vertical break. So like how much your fastball essentially rises. And he's starting to locate it up in spring. I'm just listening to Nick Pollock on the Plus Pitch podcast. There's a lot more good locations with the fastball up. And with that, I think the strikeouts are going to come. I think that this is, you know I've tried to find a pitcher like this every year since I did find one in Shane McClanahan, like the pre-breakout price, deep price pitcher before he was essentially an ace. And I have not been more confident that I have found one in Bobby Miller, even though it's not as depressed as a cost as Shane McClanahan was a few years ago. I think that Bobby Miller is just waiting to become like the next best thing in pitching in baseball here.
Okay, well, those secondaries are going to have to improve a little bit because that's a 46th percentile swing strike rate on the slider.
Yeah.
I mean, the gauntlet's been thrown down, Steve.
What's the mayor's bet? Rich is calling for one in the chat there.
Dude, well, I already told you I owe you a t-shirt from the Juan Soto bet that I lost out last year.
Okay. So let's do.
I think we do another RotoWiz shirt, right, and you got to cash in on your RotoWiz.
Yeah, I know. I gotta get.
My only thing is, I also remember that both PLV and Stuff Plus were all over Hunter Green as well. I'm just saying that there's always some misses. I know he's not Hunter Green.
He has a better control.
He's got
a better shape on his fastball. Like, he does not have the homer problem that Hunter Green has, because his fastball, despite being 100, is bad.
Okay. Well, we got a lot of names, Steve.
Yeah, we got a lot of names.
We've gone back and forth.
Love it. Yeah.
Let's
we could talk about Bobby Miller all day if it was up to us, right?
Yes. We'll keep it going and go back to fades. We're going to bounce around a little bit. Your fades, but we got to take our first ad break. We'll be right back. Unless you're on the stream and then there's no ad break, then we're still getting the feel for this, guys. So welcome back. Steve, we went out of order a little bit, but let's hear your first fade. For ADP,
another part of fade that's been part of my process here on the chalkboard that I think I've done pretty well on. I know Miles Straw was a big fade of mine, and in similar vein, I have Esteer Ruiz. I think Jake McCarthy was one for me last year. I just cannot get behind steals only guys, and I think the fade for Esteer Ruiz has sort of already happened before he even got into a game. I think they moved him off of center field. Esteer Ruiz, that is. There's been hints that he might platoon. J.J. Bleday has been amazing in spring, and they're playing him some in center. But I just think that it's a really, really fine line that a player has to teeter on when their main quality is just speed and really isn't a major league player otherwise. There's tons of weak contact. Ruiz strikes out more for a guy of this profile than you would like. It's 20%, which doesn't seem great, but that's a lot for a guy that you just want to put the ball in play and get on base and get singles sometimes. I know there was some rumblings in the offseason that he was working on his strings, trying to get more power, but it seems like Oakland doesn't really buy that yet because of, the fact that there's been rumblings that he's going to platoon and lose playing time already. So, there's so many things that have to go right for him to stay in that lineup and get those amount of steals. But when you're an 86 WRC plus player and have a 654 OPS, no matter how many steals you have, you know, there is some potential that you're not going to be on the team for long and could be sent down. So I just do not like investing really in these steals only players. So I am out on Esteban Ruiz for this year.
Yeah, this is a Gisuelli special right here because there was Jake McCarthy. There was Miles Straw.
Yep.
So as Rich has said in the chat, a stay away Ruiz. And I second that one. This one, I mean, like you said, since the platoon, his numbers have been dropping. Like, I think some of his ADP spots have been
more
like 170,
I had him at 120. So maybe we'll have to look back on that and, you know, I'll have to adjust my scoring there a little bit to
after
actually,
I put the, you know, after I threw the Ozuna out, you're going to have to give me a good faith ADP slide.
Yeah.
Or maybe an over under on steals would be also pretty interesting, but because he could pinch run and everything. So
that's true.
I'm going to try to keep bouncing and make sure we don't miss anybody, but I think we're on targets. And my second target is Mr. Jung-Hoo Lee. This one, Steve, yes, I'm biased. I've got several shares, but I'm excited, man. It's this feels like Stephen Kwan all over again with a little more pop. You know, he looked up all his life to Ichiro as his idol. So this has got kind of South Korean. It's a little oversimplified, but if you look up their swings, very, very similar. And man, this guy has some Ichiro qualities about him. Namely, he pretty much walks more than he strikes out. He hardly ever strikes out. And his lifetime batting average in the KBO is 340. Yet his projections have him at like a high 280s. For the Giants leading off, this is one that, oh man, now I'm going to blank. I should have wrote it down. The old Brewers pitcher who spent time in the KBO, the name is escaping me. There was a really cool article where he was talking about how when he was in the KBO, Jung-Hoo Lee was 18 years old and already had the truest contact skills in the entire league. And he was like, I'm not joking when I say that. Like, you had to have such a plan for how to get him out. It's kind of like how people used to talk about like Michael Brantley, just like a nightmare to try to pitch against. And on top of that, he has 60 grade speed, no projection system has him over 9 steals. He's already got 2 steals in spring training. And he's batting 343 with a homer in spring training. So I think in the best case, and this is getting starry-eyed, the best case scenario for him this year, we're talking 15 homers, 20 steals, and a batting average that could compete with the batting title, 330, 340. That said, his ADP is at 249, and he has to get up to 207. And I think even if he went like 10-10, and hit 300 with all those runs, he's going to eclipse 100 runs leading off of the Giants. His hit tool is just that good. I feel like this is kind of the new Stephen Kwan. The price is right. And, yeah, I'm here for Jung-Hoo Lee.
I'm with you. I think it's someone that I wish I targeted more, especially in NFBC leagues where I had batting average to make up.
I paired him with Schwarber in my home league.
Yeah, I think that's a great call, and I know for your league, this kind of player, it's like maybe a Stephen Kwan with a little bit more power, I think is a good comp.
What I said in the leadoff.
It's a great call. Like the Giants are a smart organization. I know they in listening to a lot of, you know, Giant content over the winter, they wanted guys to play every day. That, you know, they've had some success like platooning and squeezing the most out of guys and not necessarily having starters or guys like for fantasy that were fantasy relevant, like, right? Like how
last 30 home run hitter was Barry Bonds.
Not that Jung-Hoo Lee is going to be a 30 home run hitter, but Jorge Soler should play every day and could potentially be one. Jung-Hoo Lee should play every day and be a guy who provides value. Like they're a good organization that doled out a pretty good contract to a player like this. It doesn't seem like that would be by mistake. So I really like Jungle Lee. I think it's a good call and a good target. I think that, like, I'd not saying that it's a bad pick or anything. Like, I would be shocked if he wasn't a top 200 player.
Yeah, I think he should be, which I think is just where he's undervalued. I think NFBC probably overlooks runs. We've talked about it, and maybe focuses more on kind of homers plus steals.
There's not any data really on it, and he's been really good this spring, right? General Lee. So
absolutely,
it's a good call.
Well, let's keep rolling, Steve. Now you snuck in Bobby Miller target.
Yep.
And yet we got a fade from each of us. So I think we're back to fades, but why don't you give me your second fade?
Got it.
And then, and then I'll mirror from there.
All right. My second fade is Adley Rutschman. He is at ADP 52. So that means you have to finish as the 63rd or worst player on the Razzball Player Rater. This is not a knock on Adley. Like, Adley is an amazing player. I think he is going to be the best catcher of this generation. Like, he is an amazing real life catcher. Like, the Orioles are in great hands, because if he's their best player, and he is, I think it's more of a testament to how deep the catcher pool has gotten. And there's just a lot more guys that I'm comfortable with taking much later as my first catcher, even in, two catcher leagues. And then another thing, like, when you took the guys who were number one catchers and paid the premium for guys like JT Realmuto recently and Salvador Perez in the recent past, like, you got an extreme outlier skill. Like, you got 20 stolen bases from JT Realmuto, which no catcher did. Not a lot of people before the stolen base rules stole 20 bases, right? And then with Perez, you got, like, 40 homers, high 30 homers, which was, you know, amazing from a catcher position, good for any other position. Adley's an amazing player, but you're going to get, what, 280, 800 OPS with 20 to 25 homers, which is amazing for catcher, amazing for real life to get that from that position. But I don't know if it's worth the 52nd pick and the first overall catcher that you pay for fantasy. Like, he's an amazing real life catcher, but I think there's plenty of more options this year. It's just the deepest the pool has been in a long time, so that's why I'm fading Adley.
I think that's fair. Yeah, he was a fade last year for me, and like, even last year, I think he was 80 homers, 80 RBIs, 20, like, or 80 runs, 80 RBIs, and 20 homers, which is rock solid. That said, he DH'd a ton, and this year, like, it's just a tough call. So, moving on to my fade, second fade, and it is Lane Thomas, who. This one is tricky because I feel like he was a popular bust candidate coming into the offseason. He's just one of those guys who, you know, under the hood, their pages don't necessarily light up. On his pitcherless page, he's like 147th on ideal plate approach. His hard contact is also not impressive, like 160th on his rank there. That said, last year on the surface, it did look really good with a 28 homer, 20 steal, 268 line there. And in spring, Lane Thomas has been very impressive with three homers, hitting 306, and has five steals. All that to be said, I just don't know. Like, last year, it seemed like everything that needed to go right went right. He played 157 games. Even on the base paths, he got caught five times, so it's not like he's extremely successful. On the pass there. I mean, he is fast. I think the steals is what I would be most safe with, but it's just more the pop for me that I don't think I'm buying that he's a 25 home run hitter. And I don't think the average, when you look at his two seasons or his lines prior to that, hitting 240 in terms of like the XBA last year also was at 255, not the 268 that he had. So I just think Lane Thomas is going to be kind of a stuff and things guy, which is fine. But with that lineup context and everything, I don't think it's unrealistic to see that his performance falls outside of the top 130, which is what would need to happen for him at a 108 ADP. So I don't have shares. I do think his ADP dropped throughout the offseason, which kind of makes this a little bit trickier, especially with the spring he's having. But I'm not wavering. I still think Lane Thomas, you're kind of paying for what I think will be a career year last year. But Steve, any shares? Any pushback? Do you think Lane Thomas is good for it?
I don't. The pushback I don't have any shares, that is. The pushback I'll give is that I think it might be Lane Thomas might be a victim of a guy that doesn't light up the Statcast page, and we just sort of gloss over it, whereas, you know, in the years before Baseball Savant, we would have just looked at his, oh, wow, 28 homers, 20 steals with a 270 average, top five rounder, right? Mm-hmm. And while that process might not be right, and we probably have gotten smarter at this, I think maybe we're overlooking a little bit here. He is a pull fly ball guy. Sure. So despite, a middling, but above average barrel rate at 9.6%, he does get the most out of those barrels. Washington is a good place to hit in the summer, especially when it gets super hot there.
Strikes out quite a bit, though.
Yeah, he does strike out quite a bit at 26%. He does not whiff that much, and he does not chase that much, so maybe there is some room for strikeout improvement. But I think,
homer to fly ball was up last. Like, if you're really digging, like, the 20% homer on to fly ball versus, like, 13
okay,
career.
So.
Unless he broke out.
I agree. I don't think he'll hit 28 homers again, but I think 15 to 20 with 20 steals and a 250 average.
Is that enough?
Is that enough? I don't know, but I still think it's a good player. But I understand where, the pushback came from. Like, it's there is a good amount of flaws in these profiles, but I think that sometimes we may overlook them, is all my point is.
Yeah, I mean, the pull fly ball, it's a good point that you can't just look at, his Statcast page is in all red, so it automatically means he won't hit homers. I just think everything comes down enough that he falls outside of this. I think he'll finish like a top 160, 170 player. I just think it's not going to be where he's at in the draft. So that's Lane Thomas. I think we are shifting back to targets, but we're going to take another ad break, and we'll be right back. Okay, so Steve, I think we've now been through a couple targets each. I had Marcell Ozuna. I also had Jung-Hoo Lee. You had Vlad Guerrero, and then you jumped up with Bobby Miller as well. So now we're on to target three, and I will kick it over to you for that one.
So target number three for me is one of my most rostered players this season, at least at NFBC. I wasn't able to get him in as many home leagues that I would have liked, but that's Francisco Alvarez going at ADP 143. So I need him to finish as player 116 or better on the player rater, which I think that he will do. Francisco Alvarez just has unbelievable raw power. It's like elite quality of contact for the catcher position, not just for the catcher position, but just for hitters in general. He doesn't chase. I think that could lead to a better strikeout rate, and batting average. So he isn't, he's obviously a catcher, so he's not like a super fast guy, but he's also not a zero, sprint speed guy. It's like in the 30th percentile. So maybe that could lead for, a bit of a better, BABIP, and therefore, a little bit of a higher average, to go with that elite power. I just think that he has the potential to be like a top five catcher fantasy wise. And, a guy that could maybe be like a prime Salvador Perez, just without the, 160, games played sort of thing. But I just really like Francisco Alvarez, and think that it's just a matter of time before he starts, becoming like a a lock for 30 homers, 35 homers at the catcher position. So I'm all in on Alvarez, and I think that he should provide value and creep into that top 100, which he'd have to be like, what? If your top 100 player is a catcher, you have to be probably like this, at least a top three catcher, I guess. Right?
Yeah,
so it's pretty bold, I think. But
that
sounds right. I like Alvarez a lot.
Yeah, I mean, for one, I think, and we talked about him recently, but I do love just like the pedigree. Like we've discussed, it's not even that he's a good power hitting catcher. He's a good power hitter for any player, and that's the type of like profile where, yeah, it could be 40 homers given the plate discipline or given the plate appearances. My concern is like, you know, we've talked about with some other guys, is like something would have to go take a step forward a little bit, and especially with JD Martinez kind of clogging DH. I think it's the average that I would, because even you mentioned Sal, Steve, but like his best years, even if you remove like the 48 homer season, he was hovering around like 265. Yeah. And
Perez did not strike it. Like Perez was had elite plate discipline in his prime. So, I was talking more of the power ceiling.
Gotcha. Oh yeah. Like 40, yeah. He could hit 48 if he got, certainly that season Sal was 161 games played. So if we had that, but I don't have any problem seeing, you know, I almost wonder what was Evan Gattis back in the day, dude. Like that was a pure power catcher. Like that to me seems like another comp, but I think he had some plate discipline stuff. So Evan Gattis, what a name. He had 32 in 128 games, hit 251. That was in 2016.
I could
like
see
something
that being,
like that.
Yeah, I could see that being, you know, an upcoming year for him for sure.
Yeah. So that's that's a good one, Alvarez, and that's bold, Steve. I might even absolve you of having to adjust your Esturi Ruiz one because all right. There's catcher tax. You know what I mean? Like
definitely,
picking a target on catcher, their ADP moves them up a little bit. So I respect that one. Did you want to throw out your honorable mention as well?
Yeah,
because I know you were hovering on this one.
I had this before I saw Bobby Miller as your fade. it's Shota Imanaga. Shout out to someone on Twitter that corrected us on the pronunciation there. But I think that this is another example of just us not having data and this guy just being a really good pitcher that's being underdrafted because,
totally.
We don't have MLB data. Like, just watching him in spring, his stuff is absolutely electric. Maybe there'll be some growing pains like there was for Kodai Senga coming over, getting used to the new ball and everything like that, especially as an older pitcher and getting used to the league. But I just think Imanaga's stuff is too good, and I definitely see him as finishing as a top 126 player where he's going at ADP 157 right now.
25 strikeouts over 12 and two-thirds inning in spring, so that'll give you plenty to get excited about. I am talking a pitcher as well, and this is a deep one. So this is the philosophical debate, Steve, on AJ Puck, ADP of 370. Now, granted, that's super deep, so the bar is low that he has to clear, but he does have to jump 70 spots to pick 308. Maybe this is a health bet, but for me, I mean, it's no secret. We love Puck. We've been talking about him.
Yeah.
But 23 strikeouts in 13 innings in spring training, a 132 ERA in spring training. We always liked this guy's fastball with his extension. I think it was like at its highest velocity would touch like 97, but with his extension, that'll like jump on you to where it almost plays up like it's like 100-mile-per-hour pitch. And we've seen the Marlins do this so many times. For him to have a full run as like the SP3, like they need him to go. And like you talked about, Steve, it's not like he hasn't gotten some innings the past couple of years. I think it was like 120 combined over the past couple of years. So I think you could hope for 125, 130 innings. He should get some more wins than he would. Obviously, as getting 100 innings from like a relief slot. Even last year in relief, he had a 266 Sierra, but this year in the offseason, he added the slider, he added the sweeper, to now he's got a full repertoire with like five pitches. Looking at all of this, my call out here, Steve, let me know what you think. I think AJ Puck is actually what we hoped Shane Boz would be at the start of this offseason. and Shane Boz was going at ADP 185. But I think the same amount of innings, the same amount of strikeouts, the same amount of ratios, like this to me is Shane Boz 150 picks later still. So I know everyone's done drafts, but if he's out on the wire, I think you got to change that, man. AJ Puck, I know he's, I'm certainly not the only one in the industry that loves him, but I'm definitely proud to add him to the chalkboard. And I'm really confident on this one.
I'm with you, man. I have a ton of shares. Wish I got him in more places. I think an underrated aspect of this is how good the Marlins are at developing pitchers. It's just a ton of guys that, you know, like even Pablo Lopez, like he's not even with them anymore, but like he came through with them and, you know, learned all those pitches and built around that elite changeup and now is an ace, right? You know, that whole, like Jesus Luzardo goes over there, become, you know, has some down years in Oakland, becomes close to an ace, right? Like they are really, really good with pitchers. And Puck has been absolutely unbelievable in spring training. I know it's hard to, you know, fight through the noise and get too excited about guys in spring training when you're striking out that many guys and have that much of success as far as strikeouts and walks in spring training. It's hard not to buy in. But I am fully in on AJ Puck and expect him to be awesome.
Yeah, I almost hope that they do, maybe offer him a follower and have some starts that are four innings. Because, yeah, I think, like we talked about, they'll probably do the thing before and after the All-Star break where they skip a start. So he's got like a 3 or 4 week break. But they've got to manage that workload a little bit so his arm doesn't fall off. But oh man, watching his like pitching ninja stuff from the left side is it's incredible. So it's going to be fun watching him. All right. So Steve, we got through Puck, Alvarez. So we are done with the targets. I believe we have one fade left each. So I'm going to turn it back over to you for fade number three.
Fade number three for me is probably one that I think maybe a little bold and tough to come through, but I am fading Framber Valdez at ADP 56. So that means you have to be 67 or worse on the player rater. And my concern with Framber Valdez comes with the decrease in ground ball rate. If you're watching the stream, I have up a chart right now with Framber Valdez's 15-game rolling average for ground ball rate and ERA. And as the ground ball rate went down, the ERA shot up. It was actually pretty amazing how symmetrical these lines are. Over the last three seasons, his ground ball rate went from 70.3 in 2021 to 66.5 in 2022 to 54.2 in 2023. That 54.2 is still like elite. It's still like top 90. It's not still like 90th percentile in the league, but
it's going
for a guy that relies so much on that, that isn't necessarily a strikeout pitcher. That means more for someone, especially that's being drafted as an SP1. Like if those ground balls go away and he doesn't have the strikeout rate to back it up, it could be trouble like it was in the second half for him with his lower ground ball rate and high ERAs. He has counteracted that over the last few seasons and bumping up his strikeout rate from 22% to like 25% in the last year. He also improved his walk rates, but they're still not nearly elite. And it could lead to Framber being like more of a really good SP3 rather than like the borderline SP1 that he was the last 3 years with that insane ground ball rate. So just something to keep an eye on and something that I'm a little bit worried about with Framber's ground ball rate.
Yeah, the first half of the year, he was actually getting a ton of strikeouts compared to what we're used to for Framber. And then it did kind of tail off in the second half, which is, you know, what your chart's showing with the ground ball rate too. So definitely a tale of two seasons. last year for Fromber, where it was a 2.51 ERA before All-Star break, a 4.66 ERA after All-Star break. Steve, I'm banking on the Astros making this work, because in my home league, where I went with the Marmol strategy of a lot of relievers, Fromber is my workhorse. So now we do have home runs allowed, which is something he kind of plays up with. But anyway, enough of my home league. I need Fromber to maybe not be a top 50 guy, but I can't have him tank this year. It will be interesting to watch. Mine, however, is another pitcher, and it's one that we mentioned before when we were talking about Stuff Plus. It's Hunter Green. And yeah, I mean, when you look at the ADP right now, it's at 140, so this would have to move back to 168. Man, to me, it's a command issue, and I know the strikeouts are there, but I have a hard time seeing how his ratios aren't just going to be crushed coming off. I mean, last year is when we really thought it would have to come together. We were looking at the PLV data. He looked a little bit better in spring, and it has all just been, I mean, last year, a 142 whip. So for Hunter Green, it's just, I look at that. I have not even considered drafting him, because I just think that there's so much upside later that offers the same, close to 30% K rate. And then on top of that, you know, the ratios that aren't going to completely wreck you. You look in spring, he's got a 720 ERA. He's got a 160 whip. The strikeouts are still there, but he's almost got a walk per inning. So for me, no thanks, Hunter Green, especially with that ballpark. It's just an easy one for me that I'm out on him. Now we'll see if he puts it all together. I think it would be great for baseball, but I just I'm betting against it, clearly. So that is the last one for me. Anything to add there on Hunter Green, Steve?
No, I did the experience last year. I was all in on him. I know you were pretty hyped on him too. Yep. It's just, there's a lot to be excited about still, I think. But there's also a lot that goes against him in the home park. The fastball not being the greatest of shapes. I know there's been some rumblings about him adding a splitter and a curveball, and Lance Brozdowski on YouTube did a great breakdown about how that could help his profile. But listening to Nick Pollock today on the Plus Pitch podcast talking about Hunter Green's last start, there's not really much there yet as far as the splitter and the curveball to really help his arsenal. So it still kind of seems like a two-pitch mix, and until he finds a way to get that fastball shape better, it's still going to be 99-100 that guys could hit for a lot of homers, especially in that ballpark.
Well, and far be it me to question, like, Brozdowski is quickly turning into one of the best follows and best sources.
Oh my God.
So
amazing.
Far be it me to question his logic there, but just from my purview, splitter being one of the biggest feel pitches, and it can like vanish on you.
And is Hunter Green come by as a feel guy for you?
Like, yes, I would much rather have him improving that change up or a curve or something.
He does not feel like a feel guy. He's kind of like a grip it and rip it guy.
Exactly.
That being said, there's still so much upside with Hunter Green. Like, if it wasn't for him missing a month and a half last year with that hip injury, like, it still would have been a really good season, because he was just striking out the world despite it being like a 4-4.5 ERA.
And even, I mean, one thing that just even game logging him is even the games where he had, his strikeouts were way up there, he still had the walks with it in those games and the earned runs. Like, I would even feel better about it if it was like one start he had it all and the next start he had none of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Something just doesn't – I don't like to where it's just, like, effectively erratic or something. But
and it seems like it's not the walks, it's the homers one start.
Right.
There's a lot of ways that, despite him striking out 30 to 35% of the guys that he faces, there's still a lot of ways that he could hurt you, which is kind of shocking, honestly.
It is. And we got to segue out of here because we're running long, but also kind of shocking is that we have a listener who actually wants to talk with us on our show. So we are going to transition to our first ever listener guest after this. Okay, so welcome back, everyone, at this segment of the show. We're taking a little bit of a pivot on the chalkboard episode. This is the first time ever, Steve. We're excited about this because the chalkboard has always been our marquee episode for the year, but we've never had a guest on, let alone a special guest who is a PitchCon prize winner. We got a show listener, guys, first ever as well. It's James Geary. Welcome to the show, James. How's it going, man? Tell us where you're at and how excited you are for opening day.
Hey, it's really cool to be here. I've been listening for over a year, and I always thought it would be cool to do something like this. So it's pretty awesome. And I'm looking forward to opening day tomorrow. I'm probably just going to watch as many games as I can.
That's awesome, dude. Yeah, you got a good voice for the podcast. So something to think about in the future. But who's your team, James?
I'm a Rays fan. I'm originally from Tampa, so I'm a big Rays fan.
Nice, Steve. Aren't you like a Rays fan? Like even though you're
I've always
Mets,
just
Yankee
been
land?
A fan of what they're able to do and sort of how they're always ahead of the curve on everyone. So a lot of respect for the Rays and sort of once my actual team allegiance faded away and I became more just obsessed with my fantasy teams. It became just a general baseball nerd, not a fan of a team. I've always had more and more appreciation for the Rays. So that's really cool. And I know, they get some slack for not having, the Trop being, you see the empty seats there, but there's definitely some great fans. And it's pretty cool to have one on there, James. So, welcome. That's awesome to hear too that you've been listening for over a year. It's still very humbling for me and I know Van too to hear that there's actually people that tune into this for an extended period of time. So thanks a lot. Really appreciate it in all honesty.
Yeah, echo everything. Sometimes it's hard to remember that we're not just talking to each other here. So any of the feedback is great. But you guys, we always plug our show, our handles. Go out, give James a follow on X, a.k.a. Twitter, at 23_JamesG. Let's get James some followers here this season. Maybe you can give us some scoop on the Rays, as we're always looking for their pitching targets. Speaking of targets, James, we are here for the action. And the chalkboard, for your background, is Steve and I's accountability. Basically, early on in the show, one of our listeners said, like, it'd be awesome if you guys kept a score of who your picks were for the season so that there was some accountability. And we were like, oh, we can do that. So we did this, what we call the chalkboard segment, outlining three targets and three fades that, as we've discussed, you believe will finish 20% either ahead of their ADP or behind their ADP for the fades. So unless you got any questions, James, we're going to jump in and open the floor for target number one. The drum roll is happening. Who do you got, James?
For target number one, I have Christopher Morel. He's been going at pick 169 over the last 2 weeks, so he'd have to finish 135 or better, and I think he can definitely do it.
Wow.
I believe he could have a season like Paredes did last year. He's a different player, but I think he can still give you like 250 batting average, 30 home runs, maybe even throw in some steals. And Paredes finished 90, so that would be more than the 135.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Morel, I feel like last year we talked about how he went nuclear, right? And he had like 10 homers in 1 month or something. But now it's easy to kind of forget the upside for like he's only 20. It's his age 25 season, batting cleanup. I feel like he should play every day. I'm kind of curious what his projections are. It looks like Steamer's got him at 25 homers, 10 steals, 243. So you're right. I mean, he's got all the tools. Me being a Cardinals fan, I don't have any shares of Morel. But, Steve, what do you think of the Morel call here?
I did not have any shares, and it's not by choice. I like Morel a lot as a player.
I do too.
And I think it was kind of telling last year that he had, that really hot streak, came back down to earth, adjusted back, and had another really hot streak where when he came up, in the end of 21 or 22. He had that really, or it was like the middle. It was like June, I think, of 2022. And he was on fire to start, right? And then the league kind of adjusted, and he was, I think, eventually sent. I think he was honestly sent back down. So the fact that he made those adjustments last year, I think the Cubs are going to give him a long leash. I mean, I know that the defense has been a question, but they have him at third, and they're working with him. You know, it seems like there's been some quotes. I saw one from a Cubs coach this week that, you know, we're working with him. We know that there's going to be mistakes. That's okay. But I really don't think there's any question with the bat. And I think that Paredes comp is a really good one. It may not be the same path that he gets there. I know,
speed-wise,
and Paredes does have, better plate discipline skills, doesn't strike out as much. But there's, you know, a path for Morel to be a 250, 30 homer hitter with potentially more steals. He had a lot of steals the year before last. I know he was caught a bit as well, but with the new rules.
Got two in spring training, two steals in spring training.
Yeah, there's always some more opportunity for that with the new rules. So I didn't have any shares, but I did get him in my home league over the weekend on Saturday. So my pride and joy, the most important league that I'm in. I got a share of Morel, so I am glad to see him on your target list there, James.
Very nice. So, James, now we're gonna shift. We can't do all positive and then go like Debbie Downer for too long, so we got to switch it up here. Let's get the haterade out. Fade number one. Who do we got, James?
I have Dylan Cease. He's been going at pick 91 the last 2 weeks, so he'd have to finish 109th or worse.
Okay.
Last year he finished at 287 on the player radar. I think he'll definitely be better than that, but I just don't think he'll be anywhere close to the 100, near 100 ADP.
So even with the new team context, you're not buying that he's going to solve the 10% walk rate. Is it the command that you're worried about?
Is this take from reading too much Nick Pollock and being so anti-Cease that you can't even see him finishing, you know, around his ADP?
It might be a little part of it. But Petco is a really good pitcher's park, but it's not really going to change the walk rate. And in 2022, it worked for him, but it's hard to repeat that kind of performance that he had.
Yeah, Steve was there. So this is a very near and dear WAF player here because – I think, Steve, was it you that had predicted from 21 to 22 offseason the Dylan Cease breakout when he was like pick 110? And then he went, top 30 overall that following year. But yeah, of course, last year, for whatever reason, it just all caught up to him with a 4.58 ERA. The walk rate surprisingly stayed close to the same. It's just he had a little bit less batted ball luck. Got hit a lot harder. So, Cease, I do not have shares. Actually, a WAF faithful, TJ, from my home league, Steve, your boy on Twitter, your new best bud, he's got Dylan Cease, and he's on the train. So we'll have to see for TJ's sake if this one comes true or not. But I don't have any shares myself.
I don't either. Maybe with a new organization, it could help a little bit. It is more pitcher-friendly. Like James said, it's a great point. But I do understand that there's a lot of volatility that could happen when you're just walking 10% of your guys. And little things like Cease losing the feel for the curveball and the slider at times last year, mm-hmm. a little bit of velocity. Those things at the margins become more important when you are walking that many guys. So I totally understand it as a fade, that's for sure.
Yep. Well, let's go back to the positives then, James, and hit us with your second target here.
All right. I actually wanted to go with Brian Wu here, but since the injury news came out, I kind of pivoted because you never know with pitchers. So I'm doing Cedric Mullins. He's been going at 147, so he'd have to finish 118th or better.
Interesting. I haven't heard a lot of hype for Mullins, and I don't have shares, so I'm on the edge of my seat on this one.
Yeah, I have a couple of shares. I think last year he was being drafted around top 50 or so. And at the beginning of the season, he started off pretty hot, and then he had a groin injury that kind of lingered for the rest of the year. He wasn't the same after that. So I think if he plays the full season, he can end up somewhere like Bryson Stott or the Ha-Sung Kim range around 70, like where they finished last year. He can have 15, 20 homers and 30 steals pretty reasonably, I think.
Yeah. Steve, what do you think on Mullins? He's a guy we haven't talked about this season.
I like Mullins a lot. I have a few shares. I got him early on in draft season. I think that's always a great thing to do when you're able to connect the dots into why there was a dip in performance and there was a clear timeline lining up with Mullins' injury. I mean, Mullins was, what, a first rounder or borderline first, early second rounder, right, for a few years after the Justin Mason of Friends with Fantasy Benefit hype.
30-30 guy.
He was had that breakout and backed it up, right? So it wasn't just a one-time thing. And then I know last year was disappointed, but I think the hate has gone a bit too far. And it's a good camp to be in. I know they talked about it on Rates and Barrels today, but Eno Saris, ever heard of him? I think Mullins is his most rostered player with a bunch of shares there too. So it's a good camp to be in for a target. So I'm in on Mullins this year. I think that's a great call.
Yeah, it's a good one. Last year, the average dropped to 233 after 258 the year before and 291 in that 30-30 year. But the BABIP was down into 271, which is very uncharacteristic. So they got the average going back up to 260. Most of the projections are at like 18 and 25 steals. I think for outfield, everyone needs to show up.
If he does that, if he hits his projections, he's going to be a win on this chalkboard pick.
That's good. So, yeah.
Good call. Yeah.
I like that. And I like, it's a good spot to shop for kind of like steady upside, if that makes sense. Cause
I think
so much volatility in that spot of the draft.
I think it's a great OF two.
Yeah.
Right. Or even if you have two, even a really good OF three.
Yep. Well, let's hear F2 for the fade, James, on fade number two. On the rundown, I saw this, and this is a guy that I expected Steve to have a lot more of this season, but talk to us about your second fade here.
Yeah, I have CJ Abrams. He's been going at pick 37, so he'd have to finish 44 or worse. Last year, he actually finished 55, and I feel like that's kind of like near his peak outcome. His underlying power numbers are pretty bad. All of them are the 35th percentile or worse, and so it's kind of hard to see any power growth. The stolen bases with a 300 on-base percentage is going to be hard to repeat that as well. The projections have him at 16 homers and 35 to 40 steals. And considering the fact he's on a bad team with pretty bad counting stats, it's going to be hard to reach a ADP of around 40.
Yeah, I think there's, and some of that ADP, Steve, is that just the helium of either the position or the speed? I know there's more speed to go around, but Abrams is one of those guys who can go for 40 or 50. What do you think about the ADP, and do you think Abrams is a fade? Because I know you liked him late last year, even though he does have some holes in his profile.
I do think it's a combination of anytime you have speed with like any sort of hit tool and decent power, you're gonna go early in drafts, right? Like, there's a big difference between the Astorres, wet noodle, and the 19 homers that Abram put up, and a pace for what, like 60-ish, 70 steals in a full season.
Mm-hmm.
I know a lot of Abrams' production came in like a 4 or 5 week span, right? But once the calendar hit June, the stolen bases were just basically there all year. So I think that even if he doesn't reach the power metrics or totals that you would like to see from like a top 4 or 5 round pick where he's going, I think the speed, the steals will be there. I think he is a better hitter than Ruiz. He obviously plays shortstop, so he's a better fielder. So I think there's a higher floor there. That being said, I do understand why the batted ball metrics and the quality of contact would leave some room for concern. And with the guys that you can get at shortstop early on, it's an easier way to pivot away from that and not take that much risk, especially now that guys like Seager's healthy. Lindor is a great option in the first two or three rounds. Obviously there's Bobby Witt if you get a top pick, right? So there's options there too. And now with the new game and how prevalent stolen bases are, you don't necessarily need to grab a guy like CJ Abrams. You can grab other guys later that'll chip them some speed. So I understand it. I do have some shares, so I'm still not fully out on Abrams. But you're right. I'm not as gung-ho about it and all over it like I thought I would be.
Yeah.
As we headed into the offseason, probably for all the reasons that James brought up.
Yeah. I mean, and he does have, just peeking at the spring training, hitting .275. He does have four steals so far, a couple homers. And
yeah, Nats are running a lot. Yeah,
probably most impressive, just a 13.7% walk rate, yep, or a strikeout rate so far. So that could be interesting. However, James, you have also found out the wrinkle in this game's logic that all he has to do is finish outside of the top 44 and you're in the clear.
So he could still have a really good year.
He could still have a great year and be like 51st and you're in the clear here. So it's a good one. And honestly, for me, I don't have any shares. So I'm kind of with you. I'm just looking elsewhere. Let's hear about target number three for you. I believe. Yeah. Cause we had Morel, Mullins, and round us out for your target.
Okay, yeah, this one is a little bit like more bold, higher ranked guy, because it's easy to take lower ranked players and
definitely
tell you why they're going to outperform their ADP. But I have Gunnar Henderson. He's been going at pick 30, so he'd have to finish 24th or better.
Let's go. I don't know if you heard last week, but I went on down this whole rabbit hole about how my whole home league picked pitchers, squeezed it up, and I passed on pitching and took Gunnar Henderson. I had a little bit of buyer's remorse, but I can't wait to hear why Gunnar will finish top 24. James, back to you.
Yeah, I think he can definitely do it. From June onwards last year, he was on a 35 home run pace with a .276 average, and that was due to some like tangible changes. He cut his strikeout rate. He wasn't walking as much, but the more aggressive approach seemed to work. So in that Orioles lineup, I think you can put up a 35 homer, 10 to 15 steals, 100 runs in RBIs, and like a .275 average.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he's hitting in the spring. He's hitting .417, but the Ks are that there's a 25% strikeout rate. I do like Gunnar. He offers a little position flexibility in Yahoo, which is nice as well. This is steep. I hope it's right. I'm not even going to comment on what I think because it's going to jinx it either way.
You don't want to mush yourself. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, but Steve, anything to add on Gunnar before we jump to the final fade for James?
No, I think it's sort of overlooked. He did make those really impressive changes. Like, it's easy to forget how bad Gunnar was, especially in April, right? Like, it was to the point where he was dropped in a lot of leagues. I think he was dropped in your league, right, fam?
He was. My brother dropped him and then added him, I think.
Yeah. So I also think he's probably a little underdrafted because, he's not the shiny new toy. Like, there's new prospects that came up. Even a guy like Corbin Carroll kind of stole the show from last year as far as like a rookie overall too. So I think it's a really good pick. I think that I could see Gunnar, the natural progression of him slowly becoming a first rounder, right? Like, he was hyped up as a rookie, drafted in the fifth or sixth round, seventh round, did really well after a slow start. Now is like a third, fourth rounder. Like, if he just makes steady improvements and is the star and he was a number one prospect. Like, he was super exciting. Top five prospect. I could see him taking this sort of slow and steady progression to being, a top 20 fantasy asset rather than the top 40, which there is a big difference, right? But I think Gunnar has those skills. He has the lineup, right? Like, he is a superstar, and I think you're kind of potentially getting like the lowest price that he'll be for years as he enters his prime.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, just a quick question on this. Something would have to take a big step forward, right? Because even if he was 30 homers, 10 steals, 260 average, unless maybe he's just really good at enough things to where that would get him. But like top 24, I guess, like even looking back at like spring training and everything, is it the average that's the path forward?
He needs to become like a Seager, I think, right?
Like, okay, gotcha. Like a 290. You know? 290 hitter or something
30,
like that.
30-10, yeah, yeah, like something
that's
like that.
More.
But maybe there's more speed and opportunity there too, right? Like, you know, if he pairs that aggression with, you know, still being more aggressive, but, you know, cutting the K rate down 5%.
60 grade speed,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, like it seems like last year is kind of the first step in the floor. You know, I could see that sort of being the case. But he hits the ball super hard, right? Like he has the total package. Like,
and that lineup's so good that it's almost like like you said, Seager. But even with some a dozen steals in there is the upside that would put him in like the second round even. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a good one, James. I was all for hearing it. Now we're at the final fade here. F3, talk us through who you got here and why.
All right, yeah, I have Adley Rutschman. He's been going at pick 52.
This is Steve. I'm gonna interrupt you here, James. This is Steve, one of Steve's fades. So let's see if you guys are on the same page.
I'm curious as to your reasoning. I don't want to give any of mine just yet, but I wonder if we got there from the same, show our work like we got there from the same underlying process.
Yeah, he finished 114th last year on the player radar, and part of the draft cost might just be because he's just the best catcher. But I just think it's too high of a price. He has good underlying numbers that can definitely improve, but he doesn't steal. He might not play as much with all the prospects Baltimore has coming up. He might get some days off, and I'm not sure they're going to want to push his workload as much as they did last year because he had 687 plate appearances.
Crazy amount for a catcher, yeah. Adley's an amazing, amazing real-life player, and I think he's definitely the best fantasy catcher, but I think that, you know, you're paying up for a position that might be a little bit deeper than it has been in other years. And also, like, you know, when Salvador Perez was the number one catcher, like, you're banking on, like, an outlier and a ton of homers. With JT Realmuto, you were getting 20 steals at a position that no one else had any steals. In Adley Rutschman, you're getting a really, really good real-life line, but there's nothing that stands out, at least in the overall fantasy aspect. And the catcher aspect, yes, but there's now more guys that could do that, so I think it makes it easier for me to fade Adley there. So cool that we're on the same page there. Before I did that, I didn't know that, but cool that we have the same thought process there, James.
Well, I'll have you guys know, Adley was also one of my fades last year, and despite a strong season, a lot of people would say a strong season, it still checked the box.
But the rules, it worked.
Sometimes you got to play the game here. There's probably some catcher tax there. But I guess my question with Adley is on FanGraphs. Last year, he DH'd 46 times. He played catcher 110 times, DH'd 46 times. With how jam-packed that Orioles offense is, will he still be getting that volume of DH? I've tried to check like news outlets and just a quick search. I didn't see anything. But, yeah, that to me could be the difference between, you know, him being a top 80 player and him being a top 50, having a shot at top 50 if he gets those extra at-bats, right?
Yeah, it's a great point that James brought up. Yeah, the amount of at-bats to get at catcher, it's really going to it could take a hit quickly, right, if he doesn't DH even half of those games, right? And if the Orioles sort of have the year that they are expected to have, they may want to save some of those bullets if they want a long postseason run. So I think it's a good call, obviously, since it was one of mine.
Definitely. All right. Well, James, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you donating, tuning into PitchCon, tuning into to Wins Above Fantasy. And yeah, like we said, you're our first ever listener guest who's come on. So yeah, man, this was a blast. We appreciate it. It was great talking.
Yeah, it's not easy to do this too. You know, I listened back to our early episode, me and Van, and it takes some. You did great considering, you know, you don't do this every week. So thanks again for coming on. You did a great job, and we'll be sure to check in with you at least on Twitter or hear from you at the end of the year with how these picks go. You know.
Yeah, that sounds good. I'll have to keep an eye on how they're doing as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was really cool to be here. I've thought about starting my own podcast before. Yeah.
You're a natural, man. So go after it if you want to. Yeah.
Yeah, I've had a good time.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you do, be sure to throw us an at on Twitter, and we'll definitely try to get some exposure for your podcast if you put it together. And yeah, could even come on as a guest as well. Always, that's one awesome thing about the industry, is it just seems like everyone kind of supports each other. You know, it's part of Nick's vision, is that just the entire idea of everybody kind of teaming up and being here for the love of the game, which it is in the air, folks, because it's been a long off season, but today is opening day. So happy opening day to you, James, and also, of course, you, Steve. But that does round us out for episode 132. As always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_Verified. Steve is at Stav8818. And James is at 23_JamesG. But that signs us off for the first episode of the official regular season. And, well, Steve, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Happy opening day, guys.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.